Hashem has sent signs that you should recognize that the world is led by someone beyond the human mind. And he's given mankind, through Am Yisrael, specific roles. So there's three things you mentioned. An individual, small earthquake, the earthquake of Korah, and the type of earthquake that we're witnessing now. So, the type of earthquake which is described in the third chapter of Zephaniah is equivalent to what's happening in Nepal. You know, the city's been destroyed and emptied out of the inhabitants. It's exactly as is depicted, and the sages learn out from that passage, which where it says, Zephaniah says, if I punish the nations, even if you're not punished, but in such a manner you have a massive earthquake, then Achtikhi Musa, I do it so that you, the people of Israel, will learn for it an ethical guidance. So even things like that happen elsewhere, we have to take it to ethical guidance. Can someone check up if at least this is on, the Kol HaLashon is on?
Yeah,
it is on, yes, okay. So I'll continue with this at the moment, that one of the very earliest Rishonim, really still one of the Gaonim, is Rabbi Nissim Gaon, who wrote a commentary on belief and also who wrote an important introduction to the Gemara. You find it in the front of every Shas Gemara. So this Rabbi Nissim, who also came in Roshas, and he says like this, that all things that happen in the world, well, Hashem has many things in mind, but one of the things he has in mind is that if the people of Israel find out about it, then they've got to learn from it lessons. We can't understand Hashem entirely in whatever happens in the world, but whatever does happen in the world, we have to take from it an ethical guidance for ourselves. We shouldn't allow events that happen in the world around us to say, well, nothing to do with us, what happened to others. It makes no difference. That's why Hashem in the Torah tells us about the deluge that happened to mankind many years ago. And then it tells us in the words of the prophets afterwards, in the time of the first kingdom of Am Yisrael, many different situations of misfortune that come upon the nations, so that we should learn lessons. You go through Isaiah or go through some of the other prophets, Amos, you see there's a reference there to the way in which Hashem is concerned for all mankind at all times. But these prophecies are given to the people of Israel because we have to learn from it. We're supposed to give guidance to mankind and set an example. If we don't do so, then sometimes things happen all over the world and they consider our responsibility. Once you know about it, you're responsible. And there's a long drosha of the Ran about this. Hashem starts with nations from afar. If you take notice, well or good. If not, he brings them nearer and nearer until it comes upon you. And that's why the land of Israel was made desolate. All the nations realize the people of Israel have not fulfilled their function. I made it completely desolate. It says already in the Chumash, Parshat Nitzavim. It tells why does Hashem make this land a complete desert, as it was for many hundreds of years, because the nations will come and say, why did it happen? They'll wake up and they'll tell you, you're scattered all over the other nations, it's your fault. Obviously, Hashem is punishing you because you haven't fulfilled your covenant with Hashem. So, the Chofetz Chaim, he put this in practice, because at the time when there was, I think, the different situation, there's one of his droshes, he says, well, we're now in a time when there are thousands of people being killed somewhere in the Far East, so we have to learn a lesson from it. And it's known in the yeshiva of Radin, when we heard from somebody about the Japanese war, where many people were killed, no Jews were involved, he called everyone together and he said, listen, there's a terrible war which is killing a lot of people. And we've got to change. And then when he, near his death, when he realized what's happened to Europe, he gave a lot of muster about it. What's happening to Europe is terrible. And who knows what the Jews are going to have to experience. So we've got to all wake up. And we're just following really the ways of the prophets and the ways of this verse. Now, since we're confronted with the actual earthquake, so there are very interesting comments in the Gemara in Brochas, Dafnun Tes, in Shas Bavli, which you all look up, and you can easily look it up these days in the Art Scroll, which you've got a few copies downstairs. In the second volume, you'll find it near the end, page 59. But of this we only have one copy of the Yerushalmi. There are others in Hebrew, but I'm going to do this because it's really, we should know, there are many earlier statements concerning different things in the Jerusalem Talmud than there are in the Babylonian one. So, it says there, it says in the Mishnah, in the last Mishnah in Brochas, says that you have to make a blessing on his voice on shocking events, which is described after the earthquakes. And you make the bracha, shekofo murato ma'olam. It can happen in any part of the world. And it's given to us to recognize that he is the Almighty. So that's what's taught in the Mishnah. The Gemara brings a Braita. A Braita comes from the same period of time in the history of oral traditions. The Mishnah is called Braita, which means it's outside. It was outside the compilation of Rivud HaNasi, but still it has equivalent, at least antiquity. And here there's a certain din mentioned. Matrin alazvot. We don't only say blessing on it, we sound the shofar and cry out to Hashem when we experience earthquakes. And whenever calamity falls to the community, we are obligated to cry out in prayer and sound trumpets. And earthquakes cause buildings to collapse. They're included in this law. And therefore, there's a question. Does this mean you've got to blow with trumpets or with ram's horns, with shofarot? And the Rambam says you need trumpets. But the Talmud Bavli, it appears you have to blow with shofar. So really, if we were to experience and see it ourselves, this is somebody, any Jews in the Pelham, in that area, it's spreading. There are quite a few earthquakes have taken place and continue to take place in the whole area. And they have to blow the shofar. That's the Rambam's decision on the basis of this Yerushalmi. And the prayers you have to say are Neinu. Then Shmuel says as follows. Question is, what are these phenomena? So it's well known, Shmuel was a great Babylonian scholar. He was a judge on the highest level. A dine mamonot, which generally decide the halacha like Shmuel. In addition, he was a doctor. And he also made the statement, I know the streets of Nadohi, which was his city, and I know the streets of heaven as well as I know the streets of Nadoi, because he was also a great astronomer. And in fact, he mentioned certain astronomical phenomena which were only found out a thousand years later, or many hundreds of years later, by the non-Jewish astronomers. So there's a discussion concerning a phenomenon of this nature. So he says, If it were to happen that a Zika, which is mentioned, passed through the constellation of Cassil, now Cassil is known today as the Orion, the hunter located near the Pleiades, which are between Aries and Taurus. That's how they're known today, the various constellations in the heavens. Alternatively, Cassil is not a constellation, but a single bright star in the southern sky, known in Arabic as Suha. And in general astronomy, as Canopus. These lesser stars are named for it as well. They're known as Cassilim. Cassil might also refer to a group of stars, single large star. So when the shooting star, the Zika is a shooting star, when the shooting star crosses the heavens, it does not pass through the constellation of Cassil. This is guided by divine providence, which reflects the world from destruction. I mean, those who analyze these matters according to modern knowledge, they say that one of the dangers which exists today also is that a shooting star might come to clash with this globe, which could cause destruction. And in fact, there's a movement today to find ways of diverting them in some manner. So this concept is also present in someone who was a very big scholar in many sciences, a brilliant man called Velikovsky. So he in fact goes more into ancient history and says there have many things that happen in this world, as was mentioned already by the sages, that Hashem, when he created this globe, it was after there had been various collisions between different bodies in the universe. So he wrote quite a few books on worlds and collision to explain many phenomena that we find remnants on this globe from previous collisions that took place between this globe and other bodies, until Hashem prepared the world to this globe, in other words, to be able to produce various minerals and plants and then also animal life and the human being. Well, then one of the basic interpretations in the ancient, to some extent, esoteric traditions of Am Yisrael, as they are described in his works, and you'll also find them described in a more simple fashion, because he'd written quite a lot of books on this subject, but in a more simple manner, from Jewish sources, in the Encyclopedia of Biblical Interpretation of Rav Kasha, which we have in the library. First volume, very interesting. But in any case, Shmuel, he said, certainly some of these shooting stars could destroy the world. But they questioned Shmuel. They said, we saw a shooting star pass through the constellation of Cassil, and nothing happened. So Shmuel said to him, it's not possible. Because it was right, either it was in front of the constellation or it was behind the constellation. But if it passed directly through Cassil, then it would destroy the world. Anyway, this is just really demonstration that Shmuel, he understood a great deal about astronomy and used the words, he said, I'm as knowledgeable in the powers of the heavens as I'm knowledgeable in the paths of Nador, my city. So, why did he know all the streets of his city? So Rashi says he was a doctor. Yeah. So, either Chavrusa was a doctor, and when Dimna Kahi had a car, he took me around everywhere. The doctor was Big Talmud Chochem. And together with him, founded the first Manchester Koyo. So, used to say, you know, a doctor who has to look after his patients, he gets to know all the streets, like Shmuel did. Well, Shmuel, in addition to being a doctor and a huge Talmud Chacham, and the biggest expert in his time in Dinei Mamonot, he was also a very great astronomer. He said, I know the paths of heaven as well as I know the paths of Nator, my city. But there's one thing I don't know clearly in heaven, and this is the exact path of the Zika, which is a shooting comet. I don't know what it is. The stars and constellations are permanent fixtures in the heavens. Therefore, their path and location were known to Shmuel. Shooting stars and comets appear from time to time and do not remain for long periods. He didn't always know how they suddenly come into being, and then sometimes they disappear. So the Gemara even asks, how did Shmuel know all this? Did Shmuel go up to heaven to learn all the secrets, the heavenly bodies, to travel out to space and knew what's going on? But Al-Shem, mi yisapeh shvakim b'chokhma. His knowledge came from Hashem. Who tells man with wisdom what transpires in the heavens, in Pasuk and Iyov? This we see that God sometimes teaches man about the workings of heavens. So Shmuel, knowledge of these matters, was acquired in this fashion. That means through his toil and the learning of Torah, he acquired knowledge of the heavenly bodies. Or he acquired this knowledge by means of his great wisdom. So the truth is that it is indeed remarkable. So you can say like this, the Pasuk in Iyov shows that Hashem can teach man. Although Shmuel might well have studied astronomy and astrology, these uncertain disciplines, which involve much hypothesis and guesswork. So therefore, it's more probably acquired his knowledge through oral tradition received by Moshe from Hashem, who transmitted this wisdom to Moshe, so that Israel will be able to accurately calculate the correct times for new months and leap years. This is called in the Gemara the Sora Ibur. No question that there was a whole body of great knowledge in many areas, especially also in astronomy, which goes back, it would appear, to the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe is given by Hashem. And that's the easiest way to understand, let's say, the Rambam in his time. He was the greatest astronomer of his time. And when he was in Cairo, where there were Muslims, the great scholars and in intellects, under the Sultan also, they admired the Rambam enormously because he was a man of such fantastic knowledge. In fact, I know when I gave a shiur in Mansur Hills, Kiddush HaChodesh of the Rambam, which was attended primarily by scientists and university lecturers. And I had to use all types of astronomical books of recent times to understand it. I'm not surprised, as I found out recently, that the Rambam, when he was in Cairo, or near Cairo, where was the Sultan's residence, and it's also the oldest university in the world, Cairo University, came before all the Western universities. And they invited the Rambam to give them lectures in astronomy, the greatest Muslim scientist. And, you know, it's just that the Rambam's scientific knowledge was so enormous. And where did he get it from? I mean, he already learned a little bit here and there, but he certainly had a tradition which goes into the study of the other sciences, and which try to keep up to date also with all modern knowledge of each period, but the basic understanding goes back much further. How is it that, let's say, we've got, I don't know if he's still living, the son used to learn here now, Yeshiva, or Vidal. Vidal was an astronomer general in Greenwich, didn't know much about Judaism. When he found out and studied Talmudic astronomy, he saw how exact it is in so many areas. How could they have known it? They became a Baal Teshuva. We got here in the library, his two-volume work, called Tzva Shemayim, on astronomy. And a lot of it goes right back to the ancient times. Although it's only been discovered in recent times, where there's confirmation. And also, Chazon Ish never went to, didn't go to school, you know. And nevertheless, if you look in the Sefer Chazon Ish, you'll find the Sefer, astronomical diagrams, and logarithms, and sorts of. In fact, when I was a rabbi of the students in Manchester, so I'll never forget, I had a student came from far, but he was a student of higher mathematics. So I just showed him, I opened the pages in the Chazon Ish of the astronomical and mathematical calculations with the diagrams and everything. It says, well, where did he learn it? Where did he learn it? And the Vilna Gaon, I mean, he was a genius, what he knew. But because if we learn Torah on a very deep level, then sometimes Hashem gives an opening to this type of knowledge. And unfortunately, came too late to Eretz Yisrael to be near the Chazon Ish, but I was able to be near to his brother-in-law, the Stipler, the father of Chaim Kanievsky. And I know his knowledge in this area, I never had a connection with him, but in the area of illnesses and medicine, he was a person who mastered many areas of modern problems, medical problems, even the extent there was a person who had a severe brain problem, brain tumor or something, and the Chazon Ish, the Stipler was able to give directives which followed then afterwards by the surgeons to heal this person. I mean, they're fantastic. They give a fantastic art of Ishmaya, help from heaven, to be able to understand the secrets of nature. On the other hand, you find also the Vilna Gaon, he asked one of his students, my disciples, to go and translate Euclid's book on geometry and other works, because he said all this can help. You can make use, as Rama also did. Rama, in fact, he described the other areas of knowledge are like those who help, you know, they like all the servants who help to prepare a banquet, so you can need a lot of helpers to prepare food, to heat them up and so on. So you need the scientists also to help to understand more deeply the secrets of the Torah. And that's shown more and more today when you find non-Jews also saying that the Bible, even a clearer knowledge of the Bible, a clearer knowledge of sciences, demonstrates that there are so many areas hinted at in the Bible and the Jewish traditions which throw a light upon every area of science. Anyway, so that's this question, how did Shmuel reach such a level? Shmuel himself was studying the heavens, was made only a moment he couldn't have studied Torah, namely when he should enter into a bathhouse. But the Midrash Tehillim says that Ansi acquired this knowledge through his intense toil in Torah. Anyway, now then from this the Gemara goes over to the earthquakes. So it says, Elijah the prophet, he asked Rab Noroi, why do earthquakes come upon the world? So Rab Noroi, who was from the Tzanoim, said to him, because they do not separate Truma or Maaser as they should. It means, if the Jewish people, Truma and Maaser is not dependent upon non-Jews, it's only dependent upon Jews. But if Jews do not give to charity, Gotrum or master is basically in the wider sense. Trum you have to give everything food, and master also in food, but it's also din of master kesef. So a person in Israel, especially this applied in the time when they were living in Eretz Israel. So he said, if Jews in Eretz Israel don't separate Trum or master properly, then the earthquakes come. And Rabbi Noah said, what's the source for it? Bring the source. He says, Eretz Israel, Zistamid Eina Hashem Elokech Abam. Hashem's eyes are always upon the land of Israel. That means he always looks after it in a good way. Nevertheless, another verse says, Hamabit La'aretz Vachirat, Yiga V'Yarem V'Yishanu. Says in Tehillim, it says Hashem looks upon the land and it trembles with earthquakes. Quakes. He touches the mountain and they erupt in smoke, volcanic eruptions. So the first verse states that God gave signals of benevolence, and the second state, it brings about earthquakes and it trembles. So how do you reconcile these two verses? Says, when the people of Israel fulfill the will of Hashem, and every person separates his tithe as he should, then the eyes of Hashem are always upon the land. It emphasizes the land. The importance, when Am Yisrael is in the land, they should give. And there's no harm comes to that land. But when Am Yisrael do not separate, then the gates upon the land, it trembles. In other words, this was a reference to earthquakes, which took place in the land of Israel. But the land of Israel, as he translates here, the Aretz, as being the land, in the narrow sense, the land of Israel, Eretz Israel. We see here, Eretz Israel is a land which could be, unfortunately, hit by earthquakes, not so much volcanic eruptions. But in the wider sense, since we see there are also many situations where these earthquakes apply in a wider sense to the other parts of the world. So what lies behind it? We have to show the world charity and connection with the poor. Now, I'd say, how does this apply today? It applies very much. Baruch Hashem, Hashem has given us back the land. And we haven't for over 100 years. I think there've been no major, dangerous earthquakes. Though the geologists and the deal with this, they're afraid it could happen any time, because we are in a very delicate area, geologically speaking, of possibilities of quakes. But it hasn't happened, Baruch Hashem. So what does it depend on? Hashem says, if we go back to the principle mentioned before, that Hashem sometimes sends these terrifying situations to distant parts as a warning can happen to us, as it says in the prophets, and as it says in all those who speak about the present situation, even now, a fright has taken place here in Israel. It could happen here, and we're not sufficiently protected. We haven't built sufficient foundations for our buildings to stop them being damaged in earthquakes. They will become very much concerned. So how do we put it right? We should know that, unfortunately, in this country, there's not enough consideration for Truma and Masa. And by this I don't mean that people, before they eat, they don't separate. Because it doesn't mean giving away much of one's income. If a person is not an agriculturalist, doesn't have farms. If he does have farms, you can avoid having to give away 1/10 of all your crops. Because the din is Masa Sheni, so you can redeem. In any case, you can't use it for the poor. Masa Oni, Also, if you separate, made the separation of Maaser Rishon to the Levim, you've separated, then you can eat the rest just to make a separation. You don't have to give, actually give things to the poor. And there are many people who don't give to charity. They don't give a tenth of the income for charity. And what is even more severe is that the state of Israel is not concerned with poor families. We've got such a high level of the poor, so people are below the poverty line, more than any other Western country, some say. So this has to be put right, especially in view of the fact that the beginnings of the return of so many Jews to Eretz Israel, it was accompanied by a government and by leadership that felt very much that we have to make it a social welfare state. We've got to help, we've got to pool our resources. Many people even had the idealism of living in kibbutzim and giving up private possessions, which was motivated by the power of chesed, which existed amongst Am Yisrael. This is one of the good qualities that socialism brought to the world, and also to many of the people of Israel. And although we know socialism was not so much connected with the teaching of Hashem, it was more that the prophetic, constant repetitions that the life of the people in our land has to be based upon looking after the poor, mentioned constantly in the prophets. And we know that the idealists of the communist movement, they were inspired by this. Unfortunately, they combined it with rather Gnostic concepts. Maybe that's why it couldn't last. But nevertheless, this spirit has disappeared. And instead we become an extreme capitalist nation, where there's a huge gap between the billionaires of Israel and the poor. We have to go around the trash bins to have enough to eat. And this has to change. And I think we all have to work hard to change it. This is one area where sometimes people say, if you're in the extreme in your request to have child allowances and to make sure that little children should ever be short of food, and that all big families should be given support, and that people we should not follow the false policy of those who say that it's charity that produces poverty, which is this is one of the concepts that said the time of the Industrial Revolution in England. They used that frequently. They said the poor is their own fault. No, their poverty comes, don't give them charity. Let them all go to work. A lot of the very rich people don't have to work. They go around lazing throughout their life, and just spending and being extravagant, using for all types of stupidities which are not important. They buy their yachts and all types of, to have their orgies or whatever. But certainly, one of the important matters to introduce into the old policy of the state of Israel, Baruch Hashem, we can say, there is a great deal of chesed, there are many chesed organizations, and what Israel does today to help people in need all over the world is very good, very great. But charity starts at home. Let's go and put our own house in order. When it comes to health, it's fantastic what everybody does to help people who are in danger of life or limb all over the world, and certainly also in Israel. But when it's a question of poverty also, we have to work harder to change the policy of the government to care for its poor. That's, I think, the first Musa lesson. Each person has to do this well in his own life. That's what Rabbi Noroi said. That's where earthquakes come. In other words, Hashem looks after things. He keeps calmness. in the land of Israel and the rest of the world, on the condition that you look after the poor. Because if not, that's the, you could say, measure for measure. Like the gaze of Hashem is benevolent, but it's destructive when we don't fulfill our social obligations. Then that was the opinion of Rabbi Noroi. But Eliyahu knows more, of course. Eliyahu says, my son, by your life, this is the reasoning behind the matter. If you look at it from the point of view of simple external reasoning, you're right. The tranquility of a land depends on not allowing poor people to tremble throughout their lives and to cry unto me that they've got no food. So that's the reasoning. But he says, the essence of the matter is something different. The essence of the matter is when the Holy One, blessed be, gazes upon the amphitheaters and the feasting place of the nations. And you see the nations of the world, they sit secure, undisturbed, and peaceful, while his holy temple is destroyed, because this is being after the destruction of the temple. Then he wants to bring down the whole world to destroy it. Because these eruptions are very destructive, and they spread all over the world, there'll be no world left. And he brings a pasuk. Pasuk is that Yishag Anovehu, Hashem cries out over his lodging place, which is the holy temple. So the arrival of an earthquake is a sign of God's anger, the destruction of the temple. So this is what is indicated also in the third chapter of Zephaniah, which we studied yesterday. But then it also says that it's the nation of the world who destroyed the temple, and also even our time, nation of the world, they want to destroy the place of the temple. They want to take over the place of the temple. They want to destroy the ability of Am Yisrael to come back to its holiness. And it, because when we come back nearer the holy place, we do hope it's the beginning of the redemption. But the nation of the world, they destroy this hope that we have in mind with all their attempts to destroy this state and the life of Jews in Israel today. So this is looking at it from the responsibility Hashem is teaching the nations. No, these earthquakes can come to other places in the world. And it's from the temple. What the temple represent? Universal peace. You want universal peace? So you have to recognize the leadership which you can have from the holiness which is contained amongst the people of Israel. So now this verse is really a passage where Hashem said, called out Hadad to all the inhabitants of the earth. But when Israel enters their synagogue and study hall each morning, and proclaim God's oneness with the word Shema Yisrael, and all the ministering angels gathered before the Holy, blessed be, and say, you existed before the world was created. You existed after the world was created. You exist in this world, you exist in the world to come. Then he is appeased and doesn't destroy the world. He is calm for the sake of Israel. Now these pasukim we say every day. Atu Lifnesh Nivroidah. So Hashem, and we will pronounce Shema Yisrael. Now the Midrash says, what is this debate between Elijah and Rabbi Noroi? It says that specific geological conditions give rise to earthquakes. Why does the Gemara ask their cause? And since earthquakes existed before Israel became obligated on Throne Maaseh. How can we say they're brought on by this violation? And the same applies to Elijah. There were earthquakes before the building of the temple. So therefore, you said like this. It concerns the occasional earthquakes and no evident geological cause. But the Rashba explains, when the Gemara says an earthquake is God's reaction to the destruction of the temple, it doesn't mean it didn't occur beforehand. It doesn't mean the Jews of the temple era were sufficiently righteous that God would spare them such trials. Once Israel turned to sin, the temple was destroyed, God's protection was removed, and the land became subject to this sort of disaster. But I think there's another answer given, and I think this is indicated by the Maharal and others, that when the Gemara discusses the cause of earthquakes, it's not a question of analyzing it scientifically. It's a question also of not what's the total cause in the mind of God. It's rather the Musa we have to, that's why it's called in Zafani the Musa. We should learn Musa from whatever happens. And whatever happens around us is a guidance how we're to improve our behavior. And that's why this is open-ended discussion. Which are the aspects of behavior which have to be improved? And it's true that saying Shema Yisrael and learning in the Beit Midrash, Beit Knesset, is somewhat bringing Hashem to his home, that he feels there's a group of people who do appreciate that God is our creator and he is our constant provider to us, his constant providence. So then Rav Acha says something else. He says that it comes because of homosexuality, which Baruch Hu says, you go and cause your limbs to tremble at the combination of the act for that which is not yours, because it's going against your true nature. By your life, I will cause my world to tremble with an earthquake because of that man who has sinned in that fashion. So this is a comparison, midah k'neged midah. Really, the world should be tranquil and nice place in which everybody can live. But if it's an earthquake, then you've got no basis anymore. It's swallowed up by the earthquake. Or your house, your homes, your cities are destroyed. Similarly also, when people, of course, we've got to understand, homosexuality is regarded as toiva. Called abomination. Now, the truth is that there are people who've got natural tendencies in that direction, which they can't help easily, but the law is that it's abomination. People also have natural tendencies for a woman who's married, and they've got to control it. Similarly, also, they have to control their perverse sexual instincts. Just like we know, when in Egypt, they made it permissible, and it was even considered high level, to go and practice incest, marriages of brother and sister. And so there's certain laws of the true nature of human reproduction, which is made by Hashem in a certain manner with special channels that would also be, certainly have to do with the biological structure of men and women. And if these are destroyed, this will fall the deluge, one thing brought on the deluge in the past, and this will can destroy human society. But let's say, what's the Torah's attitude is not to go and save a person who's got such tendencies as a criminal. But he can have treatment. And I've dealt with this myself on certain occasions together with psychologists. You give a treatment to control it, to control perversion. Don't go and make what they call a gay parade and things of that nature. And this is a very important lesson for here in Israel, when every year they try to make parades, and that way the perversion spreads and they're proud of it. They do it in pride. And that's surely something which causes the family life and ultimately human society to become corrupt and pervert. So that's something we have to put right in Israel also, to obviously give help to those who have such tendencies, and they can be given help in different ways. Just like there are people who have uncontrolled heterosexual instincts, also need control, also become perverse. This is one of the basis of holy life in Israel, is also in this area. But Rabbanan say, the third reason for earthquakes is because of machloket, because of communal discord, as it says, and you will flee to the valley of the mountains, and will reach to Atzal, to Uzziah, the king of Yehuda, in whose time there was a big earthquake in the land of Israel, which caused the cessation of his kingdom. As it says also, when the earth begins to quake and shudder, because the thought of Hashem rose against Babylonia, the end of the king of Babylonia was presaged by earthquakes. The earthquake in the time of Uzziah was also the divine response to communal discord. Not only did it mark the end of his reign. And in other words, societies and civilizations collapse because of too much discord. And this is what we have to try to remove from our lives. There's too much discord in all areas, in families, in communities, in different groups of Am Yisrael. We have always tried to pursue peace and try to solve all problems through the path of the Torah, which is the path of peace. So let us hope that in these areas of charity, one of the most important things, and of also clinging to the holiness of Beit Midrash, and of purer standards of family morality, and removal of discord, this is the Musa to learn from the present situation which is taking place in the Far East, where there also, in those areas, in the Himalayas and India, there's so many Jewish travelers who explore those adventures. That's our fault to some extent. We don't educate them enough to explore the adventure of a spiritual nature, of mountaineering, the mountains of Hashem, which is the adventure of exploring the spirit of Judaism. That's what we need to spread far and wide. Yitz Hashem, that spirit, Hashem will save us from all actual and from all symbolical earthquakes, and will reach a period, as it says at the end, of the whole world recognizing the truth and fulfilling as regard as utopia of removing discord from the world, and no longer learning any more the arts of warfare, but instead the paths of peace.